Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily, and these days more than daily, politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth, and we are joined again by James Morris, former Labour pollster and managing director at Edelman. So we are into week three of the campaign. Tonight we'll have the first head-to-head debate between Boris Johnson and Jeremy Corbyn. And for many, this could be where this race starts to get quite interesting. At the moment, it seems pretty stable in terms of the polls. The Tories seem to have a fairly comfortable lead, but we don't know how the vote is going to fall. But along with the debates, we also have the Labour manifesto launched this week. And this is where Labour hope to change the political landscape of a radical agenda. Now, we've had a few glimpses of things they are looking at, but the first thing today is this push on fox hunting and tackling various forms of animal cruelty, including the badger cull. James Forsyth, Spectator James, this was a difficult area for the Tories in 2017. Do you think that they part of the reason Labour want to get on the front foot here and make the fact they're pledging all this money to increase the chance of prosecution for, you know, cruelty against animals in the wild is ultimately because they realise this is a way they could put some clear blue water between themselves and the Tories?
Yeah, I mean, fox hunting is not a popular sport, and associating the Tories with fox hunting worked very well for Labour in 2017. I think the Tories are much more aware of the damage it can do. I think that's why, as you say in your blog, the Tory manifesto kind of goes out of its way to say that they won't try, they won't even allow MPs to have a vote on whether to repeal the hunting ban or not. I also think the reason that the hunting story had such cut through in 2017 was it came quite early on in the campaign. And it came at a time when everyone was talking about big Tory majorities. And I think it played to the sense of, what are the Tories going to do if they've got a majority of 100 and they can do whatever they like? What will Theresa May do if there are no constraints on her, no limits to what she's allowed to do? And I think that's why fox hunting played so big in 2017. Because I think to lots of Labour voters who were perhaps prepared to vote for Theresa May to give her a majority of kind of 10 or 20, they weren't prepared to vote to give her a landslide. And I think that is why the fox hunting story had so much cut through in 2017, because it was this idea of what will the Tories do if they are, to mix metaphors, kind of let off the leash. And I think this time round, because of 2017 and because of how Labour put on vote share during that campaign, you know, even though the polls right now have some fairly sizable Tory leads, no one is talking about big majorities. Even those people who talk about a majority for the Tories are talking about relatively limited majorities.
Non-spectator James, you've been doing some focus groups looking at how voters are approaching this election, and obviously it's still fairly early days, but as James Forsyth touches on, there was a sense in 2017 that the Tories were on force for a landslide majority. Do you think that this time around voters don't believe that Boris Johnson is on the cusp of, you know, a 100 majority where he can do whatever he wants? Do you think that it does feel like there's more at stake?
So I think the thing that is clear about this election is that people want to get Brexit over and done with. So it's more about that than actually the party brands. And the Conservatives have done a good job, as James just said, of like rounding out some of those risks that would put people off. So if you ask people what are your first associations with Boris Johnson, they will say hare or clown, but they won't say toff. And actually, that's quite a big change compared to what they would have said if you're doing a focus group around David Cameron. And that's pretty important when the Tories are trying to win some of these northern seats where they're trying to grow their working class vote. So they've sort of rounded off some of the risk, which means that it's okay if people think there's going to be a big Tory majority. It's also why it's important for them not to have issues like fox hunting shoot up the media agenda, because that just immediately re-enlivens those historic associations with the Conservative Party. It's not that people particularly care about fox hunting, but they do care about what it symbolises, and that could cost them in some of these seats that they need to win, which are majority Leave seats where they need to unite the Leave vote. But a lot of those voters are historically, culturally, against that kind of set of Tory values.
James Forsyth, when it comes to the Conservative manifesto, we'll talk about what we're hearing might be in the Labour manifesto shortly on this podcast, But discussions I hear about the Conservative manifesto is more about what won't be in it than what will be in it. And it does feel as though the Tories are very risk averse going into this. They don't want to repeat the same mistakes on social care. They don't want to go near fox hunting. Obviously, they could make new mistakes, but is there a risk in not taking any risk?
Yeah, I mean, this is the biggest risk for the Tories, is that the manifesto comes out and everyone goes, is that it? You know, you've been, and because the Tories have avoided this sense, you know, they are running for a fourth term, hard to believe. And the danger is, you know, this sense, you know, you're out of ideas. And if you had a manifesto that didn't have very much in it, there is a danger that that charge could take off. I think at the moment, though, the Tories are doing a relatively good job of basically keeping the debate focused where they want to have it focused. I mean, for example, today, they've got a pretty decent media pickup for promising that child killers will serve life in prison. This is a very minimal policy, right? But they are getting a lot of attention for a policy that doesn't cost that much money, is hardly controversial, yet it allows them to burnish their credentials as the party of law and order. And so I think at the moment the Tories appear to be getting away with a much more limited policy offer than what Labour are coming up with. I think it's something very interesting. Jane's written a piece for a rival publication about...
Shall not name.
About some focus groups that you thought was interesting. That I mean, one of the things that Tories keep saying to me is they're very glad that Labour went for this four-day week policy, because it is undercutting everything else that Labour say, because it fails a common sense test with voters that they can, you know, in their simplified version of the policy, they think Labour is saying you can work for 4 days a week and get paid the same as if you work for 5 days a week. And people just don't think that's credible, and therefore it makes them doubt everything else that Labour say. I mean, when I was texting various Tory candidates about how the Labour broadband policy had gone down, and lots of people came back saying there's a kind of sense that this is just too good to be true.
Yes, James, when you're looking at what people are saying in focus groups, and I suppose just polls more generally, do we have a sense yet of which policies are landing, which have made an impression on voters, and whether policy is actually having much of a centre stage place in this election? Because as you mentioned earlier, it still does feel like it's this Brexit election rather than people talking about domestic.
I think that's right. So the Labour policies are undermining the credibility of the Labour offer. So even though, and you'll see polls that say people support the individual policy, you know, would you like free broadband? Yes, I would like free broadband.
Yeah, I would like.
Do you believe that the government should provide free broadband, or that Jeremy Corbyn should be in charge of your Wi-Fi router? No, I don't. And 4 day week is worse, because people either think what James just said, which is that they're offering the same money for less work, and that doesn't sound reasonable, or they think they're just offering, saying you've got to work less. And for a lot of people who are struggling, who want to do additional hours, have got a second job, we've got a lot of part-time workers, a lot of contract workers in the economy, the idea that Labour would cap their earnings, which is how it sounds, is problematic. So it's either fanciful or bad.
Yeah, and then you have small business owners, self-employed, who do employ people, and I've seen quite a few of those people raise questions about how it impact their livelihood.
Yeah, so I think the only way in which that worked, for the broadband policy worked for the Labour Party, was you managed to get an argument that lasted a couple of days about domestic policy. And they're on much firmer ground if people are thinking about their cost of living and their life than if they are thinking about get Brexit done. So as a sort of exercise in framing, like changing what the election is about, I think it was reasonably successful. But if Labour's only tactic to do that is make ever more lavish promises, it's not ultimately going to work, because people still aren't going to see them as the vehicle that would deliver the thing that they want.
Do you agree with James Forsyth that there is risk, however, in the Tories, I suppose, having a fairly flat manifesto, which might lead some to think, is this all you've got to offer? Or do you think actually that's the best plan for them?
So good ideas would be better than bad ideas, but no ideas is fine.
Just in case anyone who's writing that is listening.
And it is really hard to come up with interesting cut-through ideas that don't sort of divide people somewhere or another. I think law and order actually is a place where the Tories probably could go quite far, because public opinion is in a different position to where the legal system is. They could potentially make some progress, but there are all kinds of other... You know, we saw in the last election when policing came up, which you would have thought would have been a benefit for the Tory party. Actually, the Labour Party made grounds on that on the basis of police cuts. So I think being very, very cautious is probably the right thing. I also think I'm not sure that they are that cautious, because if you look at the spending pledges that have been made so far, those are a dramatic shift in the way government would operate compared to what we had under Cameron Osborne. That's a massive change. And I think that's probably enough massive change. I don't think they need to do any more.
Now let's talk about the Liberal Democrats, because we will not be talking about them between the hours of 8pm and 9pm tonight, when Jo Simonson has been refused a place in the head-to-head debate. Despite a legal challenge, Nicola Sturgeon and Jo Simonson have been told they cannot take part. Instead, they do have the option of joining for a post-debate, or conversation at least. James, there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not this is a wise idea for the Tories to cut the Lib Dems out of this head-to-head debate. But regardless of what you think about that, what is clear is that it is integral to the Tory strategy that they have the Liberal Democrats polling all right and cutting into the Labour vote. I was struck at the weekend, living in London. Ultimately, I live quite near several constituencies which have what would seem like safe Labour majorities, but there are lots of campaigners out, and it does seem they're running a very defensive campaign. If you speak to people on the ground, what Labour are very worried about is the Lib Dems cutting chunks in areas in London which seem safe, and then the Tories somehow getting through. Now, you would have thought, I think probably even a year ago, the idea of the Tories making gains in London would seem quite fanciful. It seemed as though London was going completely red. But do you think there's a chance of that happening ultimately in this election, that actually the Tories making gains in London because of the Lib Dem Labour squeeze?
I think that Kensington would be the prime example of this, a seat that Labour won narrowly last time round. If that was a straight, obviously very heavily Remain seat, if this was a straight fight between a Leave candidate and a Remain candidate, the Tories wouldn't win. But there are signs, and there was a kind of, I don't know where you stand on the question of how accurate constituency polls are, but there was a constituency poll out this weekend done by Delta Poll that suggested that the Tories would win that seat because the Lib Dems are now in second place there, and Labour have fallen all the way back to third because Remain voters are, Kensington is not exactly a fertile ground for Corbynomics, but also I think Remain voters are cross with Corbyn's continuing ambiguity on Brexit. And I think, you know, I thought it was very telling when Jeremy Corbyn was on Andrew Marr this weekend, you know, how much of the interview was dominated by Brexit, and how Corbyn is maintaining this position of, well, I'm going to go and negotiate this new deal, and I can't tell you whether I'm for Leave or Remain until I've seen the new deal. And I think as long as he carries on doing that, it will be very hard for him to unite the Remain vote behind him, because I think kind of Remain voters, particularly those who pay close attention, just get infuriated by Corbyn's kind of refusal to get off the fence on that question.
Do you agree with that?
I think that's right. I think when you think about why is Jo Swinson not in this debate, it is worth thinking about what happened in 2015, where the Tories won a majority by sweeping up a load of Liberal Democrat seats. So if you think about those incumbent MPs, Conservative MPs, what would they say if the Tory party put Jo Swinson on the telly? It is the opposite of the way the Tories have won in the past. So I think it's quite complicated to think that a higher Liberal Democrat share would necessarily mean a lower Labour share. It's very different place to place. And given where the Tories are, reducing the exposure of Jo Swinson is quite helpful, because without her, all they've got is their sort of hardcore Remain position. She adds another element to, potentially adds another element to the appeal of the Liberal Democrat campaign that is not in the Conservatives' interest to have out there. When we talked about her in the focus groups earlier this week, last week, end of last week, people didn't know who she was. So, new face, like they knew the name, which was more than most, but new face. There's one person who did know what she was. I said, what do you think of Jo Swinson? She looked at me and she said, basic.
It's like a Kate Moss comment.
It is with the Tories looking comfortably ahead in the polls at the moment, don't create more uncertainty than you need to is a pretty sensible plan.
And on the subject of those focus groups, so we have Jo Swinson, basic to unknown, Boris Johnson, hair, Jeremy Corbyn,
boring commie.
Okay.
And it's not a very good
boring
combination. Yeah, boring. So boring is quite interesting, really interesting. People were much more likely actually to say boring or variance on boring than commie, because they're not looking at it through the lens of like how exciting is his policy agenda. They're like, what is he like to watch on telly? It's boring. And the more they tune out from him, the more they don't listen to what he says. And what he says is actually substantively interesting, whether you agree with it or not. It's like provocative. But the way he comes across isn't, and the more he comes across like that, the more there's a barrier, which means tonight he needs to be interesting. And he can be interesting by being empathetic and telling stories of people's lives that show that he connects with them. And by, it's going to be a competition to see who gets under each other's skin the most. Because if Corbyn gets Johnson flailing around and looks like he is the sort of in-command voice of the people, that will be interesting. That'll be interesting, Delhi. And that it's that kind of interpersonal dynamic that I think Corbyn has not really got right and needs to do better on if he wants to get people to tune back into him.
So, James Forsyth, on that, what do you think the Tories would count as a good performance at 9 p.m. tonight?
I think they would be quite happy if at the end of a debate we all said, oh, that hasn't changed very much. I mean, that would be job done for them. I think the reason they wanted this debate in the first place was they think that framing this debate as who do you want to be Prime Minister helps them get back 2017 Tory voters who've gone over to both the Liberal Democrats and the Brexit Party. You know, and they, you know, they have a 22-point lead on, or Boris Johnson had a 22-point lead as of the weekend on the question of who do you want to be Prime Minister over Jeremy Corbyn. So that framing suits them. I also think that their hope is on that, is that the structure of the debate plays into their hands, because the first half of the debate is on Brexit and then the second half is on domestic policy. And I think if Corbyn spends the first half of the debate kind of repeating his performance from the Andrew Marr show of, well, I'm not going to tell you, on, you know, voter, the audience both at home and in the studios, patience with Jeremy Corbyn could have run out before he gets on to domestic policy and his attempt to start saying to Boris Johnson, you know, you can already hear it now, you know, I was talking to this 87-year-old who was left on a trolley for 8 hours. What do you say to her? You've run down the health service and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that that is, I think structurally, this debate, which is Brexit first, then domestic policy, is quite helpful to the Tories.
And finally, James Morris, one of the big issues and something that appears to come up in some of your focus groups is this issue of credibility with Jeremy Corbyn. So as you say, they might like the idea of the policies, but they don't believe Labour can do it, or perhaps Labour's method of getting to them is the right one. Is there anything Jeremy Corbyn could do in tonight's debate to try and address that problem?
Well, that's a great question. I think, so it is too late to build a sort of position as a practical, pragmatic deliverer of change, and saying things like, you know, look, this is just similar to what Sweden is like and so on. It's just, that's not going to work from here. So I think the way to do it is to argue, if not now, when? Something has to change. The point that James made earlier about incumbency. And so just create a burning platform, and then maybe speaking to this idea there's a Tory majority to say, we have two fundamentally different paths. I'm not going to tell you that I know every way of doing everything I promised, but you know where my aspirations are, you know what their aspirations are, you know who looks after your economic interests and your interests with respect to public services, and that's the choice that you have to make, and really create a sense that change is necessary rather than try and fill in the gaps on credibility, because I think that ship sailed.
Thank you, James, and thank you, James. And I will be in Salford tonight for that debate, where we'll bring you another Coffee House Shots, perhaps another after that, after the debate.